Recording. What I ask you is this: since because you don't have the headphones, I can hear my voice twice. When I finish my questions, just wait a couple of seconds and then reply. Okay. So first of all, thank you and welcome here. So what I would like to ask you first of all is briefly to describe the organization you lead, what you do, and what are your aims, and what kind of advocacy you do, and whatever. And then I ask you some more questions.
Okay, well, great. Thanks so much for having me. And so I'm Wendy Kramer, and I am the co-founder, along with my son, a donor-conceived person, and director of the Donor Sibling Registry, shortly, the DSR. So the Donor Sibling Registry, or DSR, we founded it in the year 2000. And our mission is to connect donor-conceived people who want to connect with their half-siblings and their donors, their biological parents. And then also, our mission is connecting, educating, and supporting. So we connect the people, mutual consent contact, who want to find each other, donors, parents, children. We educate, we conduct and publish quite a bit of research, and we support. We have almost 100,000 people, so a very huge support network for everyone in the donor family. And we have connected more than 26,000 people around the world with their half-siblings or their biological parents.
And how did you start all of this?
Well, let's see. The short version is that I was married. My ex-husband had fertility issues, so we used a donor. My son was born in 1990. A year later, my husband and I split up, so I was raising him as an only parent. And my husband was completely out of the picture at that point. So my son, going to preschool, saw other kind of families and dads and came home from preschool when he was 2 years old and asked me, "So did my dad die or what?" And I thought, oh my goodness, we're having this conversation. Okay. So we had a very simple 30-second conversation where I explained a mommy has to have an egg and we needed a sperm from a daddy. We didn't have that. I went to a nice doctor. 40-second conversation. And that was it. Then he asked me a question about choo-choo trains, but it was a very important conversation because that was the cornerstone from which we could build our family based on honesty. I felt like it was his right to know his origins. And I had a very curious kid. And by the time he was 6 years old, he was very curious. He would say to me, "I want to know who my biological father is." And I remember thinking, of course you do. That's an innate human desire to want to know where we come from and who we come from. So we basically had to wait for social media to be invented. And in 2000, there were Yahoo groups. So we started as a Yahoo group. And I think before that time, people didn't know that they had the right to be curious, the right to search for, and the right to find, and then define those relationships for themselves. So basically, we opened up a Pandora's box into an area that hadn't yet been opened. And we have worked to normalize it and to understand the importance for donor-conceived people to know who and where they come from.
You said that one of the actions that you do with the DCR is in connecting people. Can you describe me in very practical terms how does this work? So you receive an email from a donor-conceived people or from an intended parent, and what do you do with some examples?
Yeah, so I don't receive the email. Well, I receive a lot of emails, but the beauty of the Donor Sibling Registry is that it's a fully functioning website, very complicated databases and coding, millions of lines of code. But you join the donor sibling registry, and then you add your posting, which is you add your posting under the facility that you used, and they're small local clinics in Italy or, you know, the Netherlands or Sweden or the UK or the US, or if your small clinic anywhere around the world imported the sperm from the US or Denmark, which is very common, you then add your posting under, you know, let's say California Cryobank, donor 1058. You enter that posting and bingo, if anyone else has entered a posting for that facility with that donor number, you are matched, you are connected, and you can do something as simple as just share and update medical information, or, you know, you can send messages, and if you're in the same area, you can go meet each other tomorrow, you know? So basically, there's no right or wrong way to connect. Some people just want information, and other people are looking to see what's possible in maybe expanding my family.
And how do you get clinics to register to the platform?
They don't. That's the beauty of it, because the reproductive medicine industry is so backwards in their thinking. They have no idea where us, the families, have been over the last 30, 40 years. They just have blinders on. They think anonymity is best because that's the way it's always been. So we found a way to circumvent the industry and just do it ourselves. So people themselves come on. If your clinic isn't already on there, you just add it and post under it. But I have to say, at this point in time, I think we've got every clinic around the world listed on the.
Can you start again from, but I have to say.
Yes. So I have to say that I think at this point, all of the clinics around the world are already on the donor sibling registry. So when you add your posting, there's a drop-down menu. You pick your clinic, you type in your donor ID or your donor number, you fill in as much information about the donor as you have, you know, height, weight, hair color, eye color. You hit enter, and the posting then goes into a part of our databases. And if there isn't anyone currently on the DSR with your donor number, when and if somebody else registers in the future, you get an automatic email from us that says you have a match. And so we notify people when they have a new match, when they have a new message, and also when they have new medical information posted, because the industry claims to regularly update medical information on donors and families, and they do not. We know this from several research studies. They do not do that. So in most cases, the best way to share urgent medical information, donors and families amongst themselves, is through posting on the DSR.
And who does more often post on the platform? Like intended parents or donor conceived people?
So I would say mostly it's parents of kids who are under 18, because if you're under 18, you have to go through a parent. But then we also have donor conceived adults over 18. We have egg donors, we have sperm donors, we have prospective parents looking to see how many kids are already born for my donor, because the sperm banks have no idea. They lie about that too. So, and one thing that we do is there are several dozen egg facilities in the US that people all over Europe use, especially gay couples in everywhere in Europe, because they're not allowed to do it there. But the gay couples come to the US, use our US clinics, and if they use one of the clinics that we're partnered with, it's written right into their contract. They get to connect with the donor right from pregnancy or birth of their child. And this is the best case scenario. There's no middleman working to keep these people from these people. You know, basically what we're doing is empowering the donors and the parents to make their own decisions about their own level of contact, about their own relationships. And we know this is in the best interests of the children. And I have to say, too, not one single sperm bank will allow this. It's mandatory that donor-conceived people are kept from their first-degree genetic relatives for the first 18 years of life. And we know that now. It's a ridiculous notion. That doesn't, it's not in anyone's best interest except for the industry itself.
When you say you partner with some clinics, what do you mean?
Well, we don't part, we have no agreement with them, but they have seen that connecting parents and children right from, parents and donors right from pregnancy or birth is in everyone's best interest. Plus, it gets them off the hook. They don't have to do the connecting 18 years later. They just use the DSR, which helps them too. And so they now educate their parents and donors about the importance of early connecting. And then they write the donor slipping registry right into their contract so that it's they're agreeing to this and they're being educated and counseled to understand the importance of early connection right from the beginning.
So just to make sure I understand well, let's say I went through a donor insemination in Denmark and I have an idea of my donor, which is like a series of numbers. So I sign up to your website, I put this ID number and the clinic where I did the insemination.
Where the sperm originated from. Because These Danish sperm, like the biggest sperm banks in the world are Danish and US. And they ship to hundreds of clinics, small clinics around the world. If you want to connect with everybody that use that donor, you have to enter your posting under where the sperm originated from, you know, Cryos in Denmark or Fairfax in the US. So you post under the originating sperm bank.
And from there, if someone else used that donor with that number from that clinic, I get connected.
Exactly.
Okay, now it's clear.
Or the donor. You know, we have now thousands of donors who say, promised anonymity, we had no choice, and donors still have no choice. They have to be anonymous for a minimum of 18 years. And many donors would be, they are very happy to connect with the families because why not? There's the industry puts this fear into parents that donors want to parent their kids. And that's not true. Donors don't want to actively parent. They put the fear into donors that parents want money, that they want you to pay for their kids' education. That is not true either. Parents and donors respect each other, and there is no reason why they cannot be connected right from the start. And this isn't like a theory. We know this from the egg donation industry, who's now connecting these parents and donors right from the start. And we know that it works. So the industry for years said that could never work. And now they won't acknowledge that it does work. It's worked for, 10 or 15 years. But still, it's like they just don't want to acknowledge anything that would have to kind of reconstruct this industry into being more ethical and responsible.
Regarding the motivation of people using the registry, focusing on donors. So you say you have donors who are just willing to be known or to be reached out by donor-conceived people who want to reach them out. But you also have donors who are interested in knowing how many offsprings do they have.
Yes.
Because they've been lied to.
Exactly. So all donors are given limits. All parents are given limits of how many kids are born for any one donor. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all false. You can't promise a limit until you have accurate record keeping. None of the sperm banks do. Not in Denmark, not in the US. So, for example, my donor was promised no more than 10 kids, which was very common in the early 1990s. Then they bumped it up to 20. Then now they come on the DSR, they find the largest group, and then they make that their limit. I mean, the whole thing is so unethical. But my donor was promised 10. All of us parents who used him, we were also promised no more than 10 kids. And my son currently, so he got two more in 2024. He's currently, his group is at 31. So, and that's a small group. On the Donor Sibling Registry, we have many, many groups now, over 100, and now even over 200. The largest group that we have is somewhere around 250. And that donor was promised no more than 10 kids. So the whole thing, it's deceptive because they just, it's a for-profit industry. So they're just going to sell. And these sperm banks, like particularly this donor with 250 kids, when that group was at 75, 80, 100, many of those parents were calling in and saying, look, our group is unmanageable. We're at 75, 80, 100. Stop selling this sperm. No, there's still kids now, like last year, still born for this donor.
And can you tell me a little bit about this donor? Like, did it mate in the US? Do we know, like, where are these 250 people?
They're around the world, right? Because this one is from Fairfax Cryobank in Virginia in the U.S. And these big U.S. sperm banks. And now there's, you know, basically less than five big ones, really two major ones in the U.S. They ship all over the world. And the problem is sometimes the small clinic in Sweden won't tell those parents. They reassign a number. Even in the UK, they do this. They use US sperm. They make a new number to completely disconnect from the origin. And those people have no idea that their donor already has 60 kids posted on the DSR because their clinic in the UK is mandated to make a new number. It's extremely deceptive. And they have no idea how many brothers and sisters their children have or if there's medical issues. And so it's just problematic everywhere.
Do you ever happen to have an Italian donor contact you for this reason?
Yeah, we have Italian donors. They usually, the ones that I know of, I can think of two right off the top of my head. They donated while they were students in America. But we have people, you know, donors from all around the world who studied in the U.S. And, you know, in the U.S., they put up these advertisements around college campuses that say, come make $1,400 a month doing what you would do for free anyway. You know, and this is a 19, 20-year-old kid. He goes, oh, wow, $1,400 a month. I could, you know, buy my books and beer. And, you know, like that's a lot of money to a college kid. So, but there's no proper education or counseling about how many kids are really going to be born, that they're all going to be, you know, not all, maybe most of them are going to be curious. And for the last 20 years with DNA testing, they're all going to find you. Eventually, if they want to find you, they're going to.
Regarding the members that you have from Italy, I have two questions. First of all, if you can give me an idea of how many Italian members you have. And with Italian, I mean members that are based in Italy.
I'd have to go look up a report on that. I think I already told you that, didn't I?
You told me that you had some, but I wanted to ask you a number or an indicative.
Yeah, I don't want to have to leave here and go pull up reports on my website. Yeah. No, but we have, you know, maybe... I don't want to throw out an incorrect number.
Well, we can actually have a chat via email on this, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, and regarding the people that you have from Italy, can you tell me a little bit more, who are they?
They are donor-conceived people, their parents, and their donors. And basically, the ones that I can think of off the top of my head, they had to travel outside of Italy to use a donor, the gay couples, the parents who, you know, single moms. On our website 50% of the parents are single mothers, women that just did it on their own. A third of the parents are LGBT. And now less than 20% of people that use donor sperm are heterosexual couples who, you know, with male infertility or female infertility if they're using an egg donor. So the large majority of parents now are single mothers and LGBT.
Right, thanks. Well, I do have a question that actually you already answered, but again, since you have so many members from Europe and from Italy, what do you see on our regulations from your side, like the loopholes you were describing?
Yeah, so it's funny because so many people reference that other countries are far ahead of the US as far as regulations or oversight. But the local laws are next to meaningless in places like Australia or Canada or the UK or anywhere in Europe. Local laws are meaningless when now everybody's using the US and the Danish sperm that has no regulations, no oversight. Nobody's watching. It's like the Wild West. Anybody can do whatever they want. They can promise 10 kids and actually not keep track. They can promise that they do yearly medical updates on donors. They don't do that. So they can make all of these promises, which are basically lies, and never do any of it because there's nobody watching. There's no regulation. There's no laws. So the people all over Europe, and well, everywhere in the world where there might be a local law that looks like they're being more accountable, now everybody just uses the US and Danish sperm. So really, we're all in the same situation everywhere. In the US, in Denmark, in Europe, in Australia, in Canada, everywhere. Because now everybody uses this unregulated sperm.
Have you ever, or do you have knowledge, like direct knowledge of accidental incest or else people making DNA tests before mating or deciding to have kids together?
Yeah. No, it happens. We have random meetings all the time. Parents with younger children all the time at a park, on a Disney cruise, at a school function, at a party, at summer camp. One instance at summer camp, the donor's daughter was counselor to her half brother. Two little boys playing little league baseball on the same team later on realized they're both half brothers. Two kids in college in the same class realized they're half brother and sister. I mean, this happens, it's so common. We hear these stories all the time. And yes, there have been cases, of course, because if it's going to happen with kids and college kids, it happens with people. And people have, sometimes they find out after the fact. There's one girl who found out that her high school boyfriend was her half brother. There's other cases that I've heard of in the past year of a husband and a wife that do a DNA test just for the heck of it and find out they're half brother and sister. So of course it happens.
That happened in, yeah. Like you actually had neither knowledge of this?
Yeah.
And were they members of the DCR?
Not when it happened. I didn't look to see if they joined afterwards, but my guess is if they didn't join, they probably at least looked on our website to see, you know, if they had other siblings.
Did they have children?
I don't think so.
Regarding, like you said, children playing and you just discovered that they are from the same donor, how does it happen? Because they look like each other?
No, just like because conversation. Oh, you know, oh, does, you know, your husband this? Oh, I don't have a husband. I actually did donor insemination. Oh, me too. Where did you go? Oh, California Cryobank. Oh, me too. What's your donor number? 1058. Oh my gosh, me too. Or, you know, it just comes up in conversation.
Mm-hmm. I guess you tried to start some sort of like legal action or advocacy or like being listened to by politicians. What kind of work do you do in this respect?
Yeah, so we've tried in many different ways, you know, through politicians, through, I've called every single government agency, because somebody should provide oversight for this industry. But there's no government entity, not the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, not the FDA, the Food and Drug whatever association. So nobody is interested in providing oversight here. And there are a few local laws that have been passed, but without completely revamping the industry, I don't see the local laws as really doing anything. And here's the problem. When there have been laws, like federal laws, that people have tried to push through, the industry has a group called the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, the ASRM. They have lobbyists. They are the sperm banks and the egg clinics. So it's like the fox watching the hen house. That group puts their lobbyists in Washington on these bills so that nothing ever passes. Everything gets just squelched, stamped out. So the industry keeps any and all meaningful legislation from going through, certainly on the federal level and statewide. There's a few pieces of legislation that have gone through, but the problem is they haven't changed anything. Today, people's lives are no different than they were 5 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and a year from now. Nothing is changed in the way that the industry runs.
Right. I guess I asked you everything, but I am going to ask you some things via email, like some data or like the documents that you can provide me, whatever, like just to, you know, enrich the part of this interview with the data and things you're going to send me. But this, I'm going to write them to you via email.
Okay.
And yeah, I guess that's pretty much all for now. I'm sure I will have like lots of more questions that will come up in my mind, and I'll ask them via email.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only other thing I would say is if there are people in Italy, parents, donor-conceived people, and donors, they should know that they can make mutual consent contact with their close family members or their children's close family members. It is possible, even if you're in Italy or any other country that's, you know, outlaws donor insemination. So for everybody, it's possible.
I guess I'm wondering now, is there anything similar to you in Europe that you are aware of?
No, because we're worldwide. So we're it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and also, it's so funny, these countries that outlaw donor reproduction, you know, certainly connecting with one's genetic relatives, it's almost like they don't have the internet. They have never read a story about DNA testing. Like, there is no anonymity. The whole idea of anonymity is a complete falsity. There is no anonymity. Anybody who wants to find their biological relatives can do that by just swabbing their cheek and putting it into Ancestry.com or 23andMe. The donor himself doesn't have to swab in order to be found. Anybody can be found. So there is no anonymity. So it's not a matter of ending anonymity. It's a matter of acknowledging that anonymity ended 20 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as I told you, I will have an episode on anonymity, and I was actually very undecided if, like, tackling the thing from what do we think is right, what do we think is right to have or not have anonymity. But in the end, I decided that, you know, the right angle is just to be pragmatic and say,
well, there is no argument. Yeah, I don't know what the argument for anonymity is now makes no sense whatsoever. It's a false argument. So you know, it's, there's not a, it, there's no debate anymore. We all know, and we've known for decades, anonymity is not in anyone's best interest. And if you want to be a donor, you have to be willing to be found. And if you're not, then just don't donate, because they're going to find you. So that's basically, it's very simple.
Yeah, I agree personally.
Yeah.
So I'll stop this recording because we'll have to wait for a minute.